I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest today is Dr. David Rosensweet, who graduated from the University of Michigan Medical School in 1968. He has been in private medical practice since 1971, has had offices in New Mexico, California, and Colorado, and is currently in practice in Southwest Florida. Formerly the clinical physician involved in the very first nurse practitioner training program in the United States and in charge of health promotion for the state of New Mexico. He teaches health professionals about the treatment of women in menopause with bioidentical hormones. He is author of the book, The Target Method, A Woman's Guide to Navigating Menopause. More information is available at www.rosensweetmd.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Rosensweet, and I look forward to hearing about menopause and hormone replacement. Now first, are hormones dangerous, and could a woman get breast cancer or uterine cancer from taking them?
Well, there's cutting right to the chase, and surely the most important question of all. And as I instruct physicians, we're at risk for being alive, and the older we get, we're at risk for challenges, including severe ones and cancers, for example. And women go into menopause, and that's the time when their hormones decline just precipitously. At an older age, they're no longer necessarily cruising on the robust health of youth. They become more and more vulnerable, as do men. But to answer your question, my deep dive into the medical literature on this issue has led me to the conclusions that hormones do not cause cancer. Now, can mistakes be made with hormones that they can aggravate conditions and cause untoward physical consequences? For sure. They're very powerful. They're about as powerful as any biochemical that's in your body. And we need them. We need several of them to live. And yet if we get them in overdose, it's not like there's going to be a risk of adverse consequence. There's going to be an adverse consequence. So excessive doses of hormones are health detrimental, and anyone can count on that, no matter what hormone they take. So one of the principles of, and that we are so careful to emphasize to the doctors that we train, who are already sensitized to this, is do not do overdose of these hormones. Get the right dose, get the optimal dose, which happens to be a very low dose, which is just wonderful, at least in my opinion. It's a low-dose approach to this. Does all that we really need to do and really help avoid any potential adverse effects. Now, let me tell you about an exception and why there's concern out there. There are several types of breast cancer, for example. Cancer is a challenging illness, but there's degrees of severity, and the most severe cancers, when a biopsy is done and a pathologist looks under a microscope at the cells, they can barely, if at all, tell that that is a breast cancer, that is coming from breast, because it can look so different than a normal breast tissue cell. That's called undifferentiated. It's a very primitive cancer. They're the very aggressive ones. And those cells, they have very little relationship to the original breast cancer cell from what they devolved. And they don't behave like those original cells either. Whereas a well-differentiated, a breast cancer cell that looks like and behaves like biochemically like the parent glandular cell from which it came, from what a genetic offshoot of, that has within it estrogen receptor sites and progesterone receptor sites, because the breast glandular cell responds to female hormones, to estrogen and progesterone, as it must do in a normal menstrual cycle and for fertility and for breastfeeding. And if that cell is well differentiated and has estrogen receptor sites, if you give a woman estrogen and progesterone, for example, It will stimulate the growth, possibly hasten it, of an existing breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And because some women, rare, but it does happen, when they get hormones, after a while, they start, what becomes apparent is a breast cancer, especially if they're paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, this was a pre-existing cancer. Mm-hmm. The hormone itself, I assert, did not create the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But if the growth was accelerated, and that's why there's concern out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anyone who dives into the medical literature and really wants to understand this is going to get confused because there's all kinds of opinions in there. But I promise you, if you have scientific inclinations and are really willing to do the homework, you're liable to come to the same conclusion I have, that hormones do not cause cancer. Excessive of doses of any hormone is problematic. And if a woman has a pre-existing, well-differentiated breast cancer in her breast, and you treat her with estrogen or progesterone, it's likely you're going to accelerate the growth.
Mm-hmm.
Make that breast cancer more apparent earlier on, which can be a good thing. So there's mixed opinions about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if someone is paying attention to their breasts and it gets unveiled, if you treat these cancers early,
mm-hmm.
oh my goodness, the survival rates are so
right.
much better. There's a whole school of thought that treats women who've had breast cancer with estrogens.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big topic. You know, people are concerned about it, but there's many medical doctors out there that are doing that because they are convinced in the medical literature that the women need the hormones. The consequences of having no hormones are great. And that women who've had breast cancer, even positive receptor site cancer, may not be harmed by the treatment with hormones,
mm-hmm.
even if they've had good treatment, if they've had a complete treatment, such as surgery, chemo, radiation, whatever it takes, really.
Right. Now, is there a certain age when a woman should stop taking hormones?
Well, this is a very interesting topic to me. Just to give you the short answer, I say no. If she's
mm-hmm.
doing well on hormones, keep on going. I'm treating my 93-year-old mother with hormones. Here's the reason. The elderly women are the ones who get in the most difficulty from these hormones. Like any woman can do well with a hot flash. You know, they're not fun.
Mm-hmm.
They're challenging. They can disrupt sleep. That's the worst that they do. But the long-term consequences of not having estrogen and progesterone lead to issues of osteoporosis, bone loss, cognitive decline, you know, the function of our minds, it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Urinary issues galore, which leads many elderly women into Depends. That's why these artificial diapers for elderly people are so popular
mm-hmm.
and the sales are so high.
Mm-hmm.
And these issues alone have prompted me to be very, very much concerned with the treatment of the elderly and keep those hormones going to prevent those, because my goodness, an ounce of prevention is worth a ton of cure. If you can start treating a woman early on, even in the perimenopause, that's the optimal time, and keep it going at optimal dosages, you can prevent so many of these issues, as well as there's a certain number of women that are going to be vulnerable to coronary arteriosclerosis when they lose their estrogen.
Yeah, you mentioned that the ideal time is the perimenstrual period. When the woman
premenopausal, yeah.
Yeah, and why is that?
Well, the earlier you start addressing these situations, the more benefit that you do. It's fine to treat a woman when she's been without hormones for 10 years, for example, but that's given a lot of time for the bones to be affected, the arteries, the brain, the mind, the bladder, the vagina. So it's like anything else. If you pick up the challenges early and deal with them early on, you do a much better job.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier to keep something going well rather than having to mop up once there's been a lack of something for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and rather to recuperate from the many losses that can occur.
Mm-hmm.
Recuperation is possible. But any physician that I know would much rather deal with something early, no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with it early on.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be dealing with it 10 years after it's had a chance to entrench.
Mm-hmm. And are some hormones better or safer than others?
Well, that's certainly been my conclusion. And the hormones that I so much prefer, and it's the only ones that I've prescribed for 20 years, we call them bioidentical. They happen to be the same molecule that is present in the human female. And for years, for decades, the very first approach to trying to alleviate the intense symptoms of menopause for women, the pharmaceutical manufacturers came up with, at the time, something that was reasonable. They needed a source of estrogen and progesterone and androgens, that'd be testosterone, etc. And where are you going to find that stuff? If you want to treat women with hormones, where are you going to find it? Well, they chose horses. They chose pregnant mares. Mm-hmm. And they collected the urine of pregnant mares because it's loaded with hormones. And they dried it out and put it into pills. And that was the very first approach of bioidentical hormones in the modern age.
Mm-hmm.
And many women benefited from what was then called, what is called Premarin, pregnant mm-hmm. mare urine,
mm-hmm.
or hormones. Many women did. But, you know, there's many hormones. About 50% of the hormones in horses are different than the human female. It mm-hmm. never made sense to me to do that. In fact, if you cut into the very thick capsule, the very thick coating of a Premarin tablet, actually it's a tablet, as a pharmacist suggested for me to do once, you smell urine. So who would want to take that? So the other thing is that all human hormones are present in plants. And the pharmaceutical mm-hmm. industry knows this,
mm-hmm.
and they do a very pure and amazing extraction process of the pure, bioidentical, molecularly identical hormones
mm-hmm.
from plants. So why in the world would someone not prefer a plant-derived molecularly identical hormone
mm-hmm.
to... Now, I'm not faulting the pharmaceutical industry for doing this originally because, you know, when you're trying to figure these things out and also provide a lot of hormones, you have to choose something like they did. It made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But over the years, what the medical literature is fairly clear about and what set a tidal wave through the world of women and physicians was there was a study done with an offshoot of Premarin called Prempro. It also contained a very artificial progestin it's called, where there was a slight increase in the rate of breast cancer and other and strokes, very slight, large study, and it turned out that it was the Prempro, not the Premarin itself. Premarin
mm-hmm.
was never shown to be dangerous,
mm-hmm.
never shown to have that increased incidence, but the Prempro did. And that, in the early 2000s, that Women's Health Initiative study was the one that was brought everyone on red alert. And so the bottom line for as far as prescribing artificial hormones is we have evidence in the medical literature that has gotten way out into popular understanding that an artificial hormone combination called Prempro is known to increase the incidence of breast cancer and coronary artery disease and stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Very small increase, very small, but scientifically significant. So why in the world would anyone want to choose that? Whereas the literature on the bioidentical hormones, though not as extensive, but there's substantial literature out there that shows their risks are reduced for breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
for heart disease, for the other issues that can be found. The risk is reduced as compared to women who receive no treatment at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's phenomenal. So there's the scientific reason why I would only choose molecularly identical hormones.
Mm-hmm. Great. Are there options for a menopausal woman instead of hormones?
Well, there's a lot of stuff that can make beneficial differences to a menopausal woman's health. And you know that list very well, Dr. Halvey, and it relates to nutrition and exercise and
mm-hmm.
all the mental and
mm-hmm.
cognitive and interpersonal growth that is so important. I'll even use the word spiritual growth
mm-hmm.
that is so crucial for all of us in that age demographic, you know, perimenopausal for women menopausal mm-hmm. for men, too. Mm-hmm. You know, we could undergo our
right, I was going to ask you about men, because you were, you know, focusing
well,
on
I'll
women.
I'll get there in a minute. And there's also herbs and nutritional supplements that can make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, the elephant in the room is the stress.
Mm-hmm.
There comes a time in our life where it's crucial to become more knowledgeable and have tools to deal with the stresses of human life that are far more elegant than acting them out.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're acted out, they trigger the biological stress response, and when you add that into menopause, you get a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and there's herbs out there, but herbs are different molecules that are present in the body. They're medicines. Really,
mm-hmm.
that's the definition of medicine. It's anything that anyone puts in their body that is different than a molecule in their body. And the intent of herbs and all medications for me are short-term. Use them for a short term, you get the benefit of their effect, and you stop using them because they're different than what's in the body, otherwise known as toxic,
mm-hmm.
otherwise known as a poison. That's a strong word to use, but if the molecule is different, it's going to cause an effect. So I like herbs and medications for short-term effects, if at all possible.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? They don't do that good of a job. And you can't give a woman an antidepressant, for example, in menopause,
mm-hmm.
and claim to, that's going to take care. Why don't you do, it makes sense to me, to do the very thing that the women are actually lacking on testing,
mm-hmm.
which is the hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I respect that people try and find workarounds, but you know what? I don't. Because these adverse effects can be very detrimental to a woman's life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I want to cut to the chase and say, I recommend bioidentical hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's
mm-hmm.
going to get the job done like mm-hmm. bioidentical hormones. It just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you lose the hormones, you take the hormones, you get the beneficial effect of the hormones.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned then the men. There are hormones for men, aren't there?
Absolutely. Men go through hormonal decline as well. I mean, the world learned about that when Viagra,
mm-hmm.
these other erectile dysfunction medications,
right.
exploded
mm-hmm.
onto the scene. Who thought men went into a menopause, right? Well, mm-hmm. they do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different than women. Now, the one thing is, Dr. Helvey,
mm-hmm.
I shouldn't be talking about men because I'm not an expert in treating men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have friends and colleagues that are.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you their names.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
I shouldn't be the one talking about male replacement or hormone replacement.
Right, right. All I know is that testosterone is very controversial. That's...
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Oh, you wouldn't?
Interestingly enough. There might be controversy out there. Now, you know, okay, here I go. I'm
mm-hmm.
doing the very thing that I was going to avoid. But, you know, I've been exposed. I lecture very often and teach with a expert in males.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been able to listen to him over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I say there's no controversy. When a male goes into hormonal decline, the right bioidentical testosterone and the right dosages is the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, men have an analog, you know, the thing that they fear, we fear, is could we be aggravating a prostate cancer?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the controversy is. So,
mm-hmm.
of course, you're correct in pointing out there is one. But I've listened to world experts on this and attended a full-day seminar with a Harvard-trained urologist who
mm-hmm.
spoke in-depth about this, and also what he considered to be a faulted study around arterial disease related to testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
And I am fully convinced at this point that it's the same thing that's going on with women.
Mm-hmm.
If you treat the right men with the right dosages, it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And are there exceptions, and are there men that you have to be cautious with, just like in the world of treating women? You know, I do a very extensive intake history and physical and a laboratory
mm-hmm.
profile
mm-hmm.
to be able to sort out those very, very few women that I think it's inappropriate for them to take hormones.
Yeah, right.
Oh, they are rare.
Mm-hmm.
Few and far between. And the same thing exists with men.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have to, you know, if I had a man who had a prostate cancer and I was concerned that it wasn't all removed and that prostate cancer had positive testosterone receptor sites,
mm-hmm.
I would not treat that man.
Right.
So mm-hmm. we're playing with powerful stuff, and we want to be careful. And it should be in the hands of physicians and nurse practitioners who are trained, and can't encourage someone enough who is interested in treating menopause and andropause to seek out a very skilled and knowledgeable health professional called medical doctor, osteopathic doctor, naturopathic doctor, or nurse practitioner who's trained in all of this and has basic, strong medical skills. Not to scare you, but it's the right thing to do. Most people will do very well even with mediocre treatment.
Right.
That's a funny thing to say. Well, millions of women were treated with Premarin, and they did well, and some didn't, but the majority of them, there's a lot of forgiveness. But that's not the way to go. That's not what I'm recommending. I say get the most skilled and knowledgeable of all that you can find.
Mm-hmm.
And your listeners, if they want, if they will email me at drr@thetargetmethod.com, we will refer them to a practitioner that we have trained.
Good, good. Great.
So if they go to our website, we offer that service because I love to train physicians, nurse practitioners. We've trained a lot of them, and it's a wonderful thing that to work with a knowledgeable and skilled professional in this regard.
Well, then, will you tell us about your book and services and your website and how the listeners can reach you?
Well, the book is called The Target Method, and it's a guide for women in menopause. And if you go to our website, thetargetmethod.com, thetargetmethod.com, you can see the book. And we've got a special, because of knowing of this interview, people can get a $5 discount on that book. Because of this honoring you, Dr. Helvey.
Thank you.
And this interview with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how to get the book. That's how to find a practitioner. That's thetargetmethod.com.
As far as your services, do people have to come to you, or do you use Skype, or can you do phone consultation, or how does all of that work?
Well, because of the many commitments I have and the projects that I'm involved in, I'm no longer seeing new patients.
Oh,
But we have a lot of physicians and nurse practitioners that we've trained in different parts of the United States, and very often they would be the ones that the person who's interested would seek out, and we could give them, if they send us their name and address, we will notify them of the physician or nurse practitioner that's near them that's been trained in this method.
Great, good.
And, you know, all over the United States. This subject of bioidentical hormones has been a popular one for quite a while amongst a certain segment of the physician community and nurse practitioner community. And, you know, any woman in whatever town she lives in might be surprised that if she went inquiring, she would find a friendly and knowledgeable nurse practitioner or physician who loves bioidentical hormones and loves working with them. And a lot of them are quite experienced, so they don't have to rely upon us to get a referral. They can just ask their local compounding pharmacist, for example. There's compounding pharmacies. These are the pharmacists that make up their own hormone preparations. So it's a wide world.
Right.
And there's varying degrees of experience out there and knowledge, but we can help connect anyone up who wants to.
As a nurse, I was happy to see that you had a lot of contact with nurse practitioners early on, even.
Yeah. I was a physician who was in charge of the clinical training of the original six nurse practitioners on the planet Earth.
That's great.
1972.
Oh, is that when it started?
That's when it started. It started at the University of New Mexico.
Oh.
By a very enlightened Quaker husband and wife physician. It got a very large government grant, and they invited me to help with the clinical training. And as soon as I started, I went, oh, this is a good idea. I said, this is a great idea. I love this. And so I did that for a couple of years and really enjoyed it. And I said, man, this is going to take off.
Right.
this is going to really become, there's going to be a lot of nurse practitioners out there.
Well, like every group, there's some really great ones, and there's some that aren't so great. So,
yeah,
I think the individual makes the difference.
Yes, they do.
Well, I had a nursing center for the homeless with a grant from the Division of Nursing, and I had three not-so-good practitioners before I got the one that was right. And she was very compassionate. She was the type of person that would spend time, if they needed help filling out their social service papers or if they couldn't get in to get their medication, she'd drop them off on the way home. And I mean, she was just a fantastic person. And we've still maintained a close relationship. And I've just started, I got 3 weeks ago, the 501c tax exemption for a foundation for holistic cancer, and I have my nurse practitioner as one of my board members because she is just a fantastic person and a fantastic practitioner, but they aren't all that way. Well, I thank you very much. This has been very interesting, and I know it will be helpful for those women who are reaching the age where they're having some issues that they need some help with, and so I thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Dr. Helvey.
My second guest is Diane Collins, who is an original thinker, media personality, and one of the thought leaders of our time. She is a master of translating ancient knowledge into quantum modern wisdom that provides a transformative platform for the way we conduct our business and personal affairs. She is the creator and author of Quantum Thinking, A New System of Thinking. Along with her husband and business partner, she consults visionary leaders and executives in the world's leading corporations, including Accenture, AT&T, CNN, and DuPont, as well as presenting Quantum Thinking to entrepreneurs and students, homemakers and professionals, celebrities, and evolutionary worldwide. More information is available at www.dianecollins.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Diane, and I look forward to hearing about quantum thinking. Now, first,
thank you so much.
Why do we need a new way of thinking?
We need a new way of thinking, Carl, because our world has changed dramatically, and there are three conditions that we could say, unless we change our thinking, are really creating a lot of stress. And as you know, stress is such a causative factor in our well-being. Now, I'm not a medical or a health professional, but I do study the research, and I know how our thinking affects the chemicals in our body, or just our general feeling of well-being. But getting back to the three conditions. So we know that we have, because of our amazing technologies that enables us to do this show, we have an accelerating pace of change. We have an increasing number of choices and complexity in the world. And so many good choices. It's not like they're not good choices. And we have an unfathomable uncertainty every day because we're in this time of our societal systems and structures undergoing a dramatic transformation. So we can see the dissolution, the dissolving of what is no longer effective in the world, and we see it in the news headlines every day, and it can be very distressing for people. So these three factors, the pace of change, the increasing complexity, the uncertainty daily, is really creating a way that we need to, as we say, literally catch up with our technology. Mm-hmm. So my revelation, I'll say it just in the simplest way I can, that I realized that the way we think is actually taking place holistically. Your show is about holistic health, and we look at the, if we look by comparison, to the medical model. The medical model grew up under the industrial age, where the general thinking was to separate things into parts, the body into parts, the chemicals into isolated chemicals. So we weren't really thinking holistically, as you know. And now, if you map this on to everyday life, Carl, and you realize that our thinking also takes place as a system. And the thinking, the way that we think, is also according to the assumptions and beliefs of the prevailing worldview. Very simply, a worldview is what we believe to be true about the nature of reality and how it works. So if we have been brought up, here's the dilemma. We're in a quantum age, so it's characterized by this kind of timeless, beyond the limits of chronological time and ordinary physical space. And yet our thinking is still very much conditioned by the, what I lovingly call, the old world view, the industrial age, which said things work in a step-by-step method. Only matter is real, only physical matter. So therefore, in education, we don't study about the faculties of mind, like the power of intent or the ability to use our intuition or a meditative state. We're starting to learn it now because people are changing. So this is the idea of what. Why do we need to think in a new way?
Okay.
So that we can make this leap in the way that we relate to our own mind.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then, Diane, can you tell us about the distinctions you discovered that we can use in our lives to create better lives?
Yes. Well, one distinction I want to share is that we can make a distinction between a thought that we originate and a thought that just what I call visits from the surrounding minefield. Just as there is a biosphere, there is, I could call it to get around, a thoughtosphere. And you know, Carl, a lot of the thoughts that we have, they're just automatic patterns, pattern of thinking from the past that I call least action pathways, the least creative action. It's the sort of a mechanical action, a vestige of an earlier time when things were very automatic in life. And so when you can do, why is this important? Because the meaning that we give our thoughts give us our experience of reality moment by moment. And what we experience is shaping how we feel, the actions we take, even the way we listen and what we say. So if you realize that you can make this distinction where, wait a minute, I don't have to identify with every thought that happens to come into my mind field, then this is so freeing because this means I can be a conscious choice with what I want to focus on, with the meanings that I want to give my thoughts. And just as an example, you were given a prognosis, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
Many years ago. Now, someone else may have given that a different meaning than what you gave it, mm-hmm. Carl. But you gave the meaning instead of, well, I'm taking off in 6 months, folks. You gave it I don't know what meaning you gave it, but let's say you can tell us, but you gave it a different meaning, like, well, I'm going to learn to live in a new way. And this shifts everything in your life, and we can do this on a daily basis when we have a new relationship with our mind and the way that it works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Diane, you talk about either-or thinking as one way of thinking, and how can we change that to embrace a more holistic or multidimensional type of thinking?
Well, when we look at you know, and I'm always making this distinction mm-hmm. between how the old world view, the industrial world view, has mm-hmm. shaped the way we think and how the quantum world view shapes the way we think. So you just mentioned that we're in a multidimensional world view now. We know that two seemingly contradictory things can be true at the same time. Now, where this comes from, technically, quantum thinking is not about science. It's about how the discoveries of science have shaped the way we think and how we can use these discoveries. So the old world view, they wanted to predict to control nature. And you think, well, how did that map onto thinking? Well, if you had to predict, it was going to be either this way or that. Mm-hmm. So that's become such a strong mechanism, Carl. Mm-hmm. It's in our politics. It's in everything. It's in the small decisions. Where should we go for dinner tonight between you and your spouse? So what's both and thinking? Because the leap to quantum thinking is to leap to a both and world. Well, wait a minute. You know, maybe, and you can see it now, let's say, in this immigration in the United States, this issue that's going on at the time we're recording, where people are starting to look at these different distinctions. Well, maybe we don't treat everybody who is trying to come into this country the same. So it's a both and. It becomes a both and. Or maybe you're trying to make a decision about your health. We're in a health show, so let's talk about that. And you think, well, should I get alternative healing or should I get traditional medicine? Well, when you start to think from a both-and perspective, you realize that you can approach your health from any dimension. You can look at, am I experiencing a spiritual disconnect? Am I experiencing something emotional? Because these have an effect. You can tune into your intuitive faculty and use that to know, you know what, like the silent tap on the shoulder. You know, I think maybe I'll go to that doctor or that dentist or that specialist. And you know what? At the same time, I'm going to investigate energy healing and the different modalities that are available. So this is how it plays out in life, the both and thinking, mm-hmm. is you don't have to be stuck with one or the other.
Then why is intent so powerful?
Well, intent, you know, it's a very interesting principle when you're looking from a quantum worldview, is that there's an underlying, let's say, fact, and that is that nothing is fixed and absolute. Now, I'm not talking about anything that, you know, we may think of as divine or God, in that, not in that realm, but just in the ordinary sense of how does life work here, is that it's an energy in flux, energy always moving, informed by intelligence, an energy intelligent conscious universe. So there's nothing fixed and solid, but again, the old world had things as everything is only physical, it's all solid objects, push or pull, exert a force to get something to happen. Well, when you're looking and you make that leap to a quantum worldview, and you think, well, if we're not just describing an already existing reality, then what actually is the dynamic where we can shape our experience and our reality? And that is the dynamic of intent. So there are five natural faculties of mind that I distinguish that we don't learn about in traditional education. The dynamic of intent, where we place our attention and awareness, we add energy to. We energize that which we have our attention on. And that intent, that power of intent, literally has a resonant quality. You know, when we like something or we're not attracted to something and we say, I don't resonate with that, I resonate mm-hmm. with that, that's a real fact of science, that we are, this energy is vibrating and it has frequency and we do resonate. So when we walk into a room of happy, exuberant people, we don't have to hear a word. We can feel it. How does that happen? Because there are these fields. And when we exercise the use of our creative intent and we do it consciously, that is how we can shape the way we feel. You know, I want to just give an example. That my mom is about to be 92 as we speak, and she's in pretty good shape. But since her partner, her husband of 70 years, passed on a few years ago, she goes into anxiety states. So the other day she called me and she said, if I could only get rid of these depressing thoughts. And you know what happened, Carl? Is this happened for me spontaneously?
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know what depression is, Mom? She said, what? Now remember, don't take my, I'm not a clinician. I'm, you know, saying to everyone listening, but this is just sort of a common sense thing that came to me because of the work that I do in creating how you want to think, what your intent is. So I said, you know what depression is, Mom? She said, what? I said, it's a choice. I said, you know what? The thoughts that you're allowing yourself to dwell in, and whatever meaning you're giving to those thoughts, that is what's giving you your emotional feeling in the moment. And this is what you're saying is, you know, you're feeling, having thoughts of that are depressing. I said, so you don't have to choose those thoughts, Mom. You can choose a different thought. You can wake up, Carl, in the morning, and your circumstances are exactly the same from day to day. One day you feel like you're having a bad hair day. The next day you're feeling great. And nothing in the circumstances has changed. Now, this is quantum thinking. So then what is the nature in a quantum world? What creates reality? And this is what they say. If there's nothing fixed, it's the context that we're choosing to live from. And a statement of intent is a type of context. So when you wake up in the morning and you say to yourself, today I am excited about the opportunities that I am going to create and encounter and the conversations I'm going to be having, I'm excited about it. Now that statement is not based in circumstantial evidence. That's old world industrial age stuff, circumstance. Or as I say to the kids, old world view, circumstance rules. New world view, intent rules. It's no more the truth, Carl, that today I don't know what kind of day I'm going to have. It could be horrible, so base it on yesterday. Or today, you know what? I'm going to have this day be great. Neither of those are the absolute truth. But you have the choice in every moment to create how you want to be related to your circumstances, including the thoughts that you have.
Now, when you talk about the old world, are you referring to the three-dimensional world where there was duality, where there was either or, light, dark, good, bad, etc., and moving more to a fifth-dimension world?
That's exactly right.
Oh, okay.
Yes, because you know what? And you realize, even those of us who are aware of what you're talking about right
mm-hmm.
now,
mm-hmm.
you know, this idea of going to the multidimensional, to going to mm-hmm. an elevated state of consciousness, to being in the awakened state where we realize our connection in the heart, heart to heart.
Mm-hmm.
We realize all these things, the yearnings of the soul, what drives us, the experiences that we're given that enable us to live our worldly purpose. All these things, you could say, are fifth dimensional things.
Mm-hmm.
But what the science of the 17th century, as much genius, it's not like we're trading one in for another. It's that we're expanding because the thinking that gave us the institutions as they were born from that old way of thinking, as you said, the old world thinking. Because the science said in the 17th century, they made a declaration, only matter is real.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even though we all know there are other dimensions, mm-hmm. it's what we feel in our heart, the spiritual connection, all those things are real, yet the science oriented us all around the five sensory domain. And that's why we haven't learned to live knowing the faculties of mind, knowing how to work with subtle energy, knowing the importance of it, mm-hmm. especially in our well-being, of how do we convert energy, how do we use it. If we have an angry reaction, if the more we can command our relationship with our own mind, then we can keep that elevated frequency state. We can be in the happy emotions. We can be in those emotions of the heart, the higher emotional states that have us stay in a sustained way of well-being. This is possible when we create a conscious relationship with our mind and the faculties of mind, not the psychology of mind, not the reactive mind, but the way to interrupt that reactive automatic mm-hmm. thought, automatic emotional pattern, and realize that there is something that is more powerful even than our emotional state, and that is our own higher awareness.
Mm-hmm. Then, Diane, why is allowing so important in quantum thinking?
Allowing is important because it's what I call the passive dynamic of creating. Now, if intent is the active dynamic, so that's what you're bringing to your conscious mind, and you're saying, okay, today I am grateful for today and all the wonderful experiences that I know I'm encountering. Again, that's a chosen context, mm-hmm. context mm-hmm. that I am choosing to live from. Then where does allowing come in? Well, when you make that statement or any statement of intent, what happens is we cannot see all the different ways that that intent will unfold itself. This is the nature of mind. So intent, which I make a distinction between intent and intention being an end goal in the future someday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas intent is more of an activation of that field. And what happens when you create a statement of intent is that you're attracting toward you what is consistent with your intent, which is many results. So allowing is one of those faculties of mind that, again, the old world view, which said, you know, let's predict and control everything. Like, what's the answer? You know, give me the quick answer. Give me the how-to. Give me the 1 through 10 steps. How do I do that? But now we discover in this more advanced way of relating to reality that, wait a minute, it doesn't work so much. The step-by-step, the how-to, that is valid and valuable in many areas of life. But if you want to create something new, then it involves this faculty of allowing, where you know, and, you know, I use the metaphor from science, astrophysicists, where they say, well, we can only ever see maybe 4% of the material universe. Mm-hmm. The other 96% is what they call dark matter or dark energy. So they're saying, I know it's there, mm-hmm. but we can't mm-hmm. see it. So it's something like that. If you use that metaphorically in your own life, it's that when I create my intent consciously with the awareness that I'm doing that, and I now also know that I can now practice allowing, let me see what shows up in that aspect of life that I cannot see, that we say, and, you know, they use the expression, mm-hmm. what's going to bubble up from the quantum field?
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a field of intelligence, and it's a field that I think, Carl, the most important aspect of the field is the connectivity. So when we say, you know, we have an intuition, what happened there is that an intuition is a kind of allowing, because you have an intent for, let's say, some information. We know all the great geniuses have talked about this, where they have an intent to discover an answer, some kind of a solution to a problem that they're working on. The great scientists, philosophers, theologians, doctors have done this. And where you go to sleep with that intent, and you wake up with the answer. Where did that answer come from? This comes from this literally mm-hmm. invisible, non-material, intelligent energy field. Because of your intent, you were able to make that connection. And, you know, I'm not making this up. But what I'm doing is I'm distinguishing these dynamics
mm-hmm.
in our awareness in such a way that when you realize, oh, you know what? This is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
This is really what gives the magic of life. I don't have to be stuck in the earlier old world automatic, you know, latch on to every thought that comes into my mind or have to know all the answers. Let's suppose you're a parent or you're an executive and you're in a leadership position, even in your own life, and you think you have to know all the answers. Well, the really advanced, forward-thinking, conscious leaders, conscious
right.
parents, know that life occurs in patterns of relationship. That's
right.
the nature of nature.
Right. Well, this is just a tip of the iceberg of what you have in your book. And will you then tell us how the listeners can locate your book and any services you have?
Yes. Thank you for asking, Carl. And thank you so much for having me.
Mm-hmm.
I just adore you. Are such an inspiration. You're
thank you.
Amazing. Amazing, amazing human being, and your show is, you know, everything you're doing, you're just putting out such important information.
Thank you.
Okay, my book is called Do You Quantum Think? New Thinking That Will Rock Your World, and it gives all the principles. You asked me about one or two of them. There are actually 21, and, you know, again, you bring it into awareness as you read. It's available in hardcover and in all ebook editions on Amazon, on Barnes and Noble's, in most stores. You can order it. And my website is dianecollins.com. I spell my name with two N's, DianeCollins. On my website, you can read about my book. You can have access to many edifying, you know, informational, transformational free audios that are there and videos, and certainly do if you resonate with what I'm saying and this work to please sign up for my mailing list, and I'll keep you abreast of all I'm blogging on Huffington Post and just the things that we're putting out in the world. I'm saying we because my mm-hmm. husband, Alan Collins, is a master quantum think coach, and he's my partner in
mm-hmm.
everything in life.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I thank you very much, Diane. This has been interesting and will be maybe new for some and add to what others know about the ascension and the movement from third to fifth dimension. And so I thank you very much for sharing this information with me and with my listeners.
Absolutely, my pleasure and delight and honor. Thanks again.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I hope some of the information was useful to you. I invite you to my website, www.holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all previous shows under the blog. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great day and hoping you will be with me in 2 weeks.